Hey, everyone. We've got an interview for you today with Abby Wright, book lover, podcaster, editor, freelancer, and possessor of what she calls the best job ever. I think she might be right, and I'll let you hear about that from her. But if you've been contemplating finding a more book-centered gig for yourself, head over to our sponsor, Author Accelerator, and click on I Want to Be a Book Coach, where you'll find everything you need to become a certified book coach and make another place for yourself in the book community. Visit authoraccelerator.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, trying to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, be they fiction, nonfiction, short things, long things, essays, pitches, proposals, in short. This is the podcast about sitting down and finding a way to get your work done no matter what. Well, maybe not no matter what, but something like that.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming The Addiction Inoculation coming out in 2021. And I have written for various outlets, The Atlantic, New York Times, Washington Post. You can find me sort of all over the place.
And I am KJ Delantonia. I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which is coming out this June, so just a blink of an eye from now, as well as the book How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor at the New York Times. And those are my creds.
That's
those are
who
my
we are.
That's who we are.
We have a guest today. We have a guest that has some really, I'm really excited to talk to her because I've been listening to her podcast. We have a guest in the name of Abby Wright. Abby is a senior editor of Penguin's Read It Forward and the Read It Forward, but she's a host of the Read It Forward podcast and the host of the Adaptables podcast that we'll talk about definitely. She's written for, she was a contributing editor at Glamour. She was an assistant editor at O Magazine. She wrote a hysterical piece that I forwarded on to KJ this morning for The Cut that I want to ask her about when we get a chance. But welcome to the show, Abby Wright.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be with both of you.
Well, the reason I sent your piece from The Cut over to KJ and Serena this morning is that Serena Bowen has fans who are such fans, they have tattooed her books or her name, or quotes on their bodies. And it was with great delight that I was able to send them the article you wrote about the fact that someone you were about to break up with put your name on his body.
Yes, he did. It was unexpected, kind of a weird surprise to get, especially as I was thinking of ending things. And it did keep us together for a few more years. I mean, how do you break up with someone who has your name tattooed on them? It's hard.
Well, and even more importantly, it got you a piece in, you know, an essay in The Cut. So, you know, all life is just material as far as we are all concerned, of course.
Exactly.
So we really wanted to talk to you about the Adaptables, because it's such a cool concept, a podcast talking about books. And in your case, Penguin books, Penguin Random House books, and we can talk about that in a second, that are made into movies, either specifically for theater release or for, what you've done so far has been Celeste Ng's wonderful book, Little Fires Everywhere. And it was really fun to watch that and listen to you talk about it at the same time. So could you tell us a little bit about that podcast?
Yeah, so I am a book lover at heart. I'm the senior editor of Read It Forward, which is a website that's owned by Penguin Random House, and we help people find their next great read. And so being a book lover, I'm always drawn to the adaptation when things are adapted from books that I've loved and turned into movies or TV shows. So I really wanted to, along with my co-host, do a deep dive into, well, how closely hewn to the originals are these adaptations? And we did start with Celeste Ng's Little Fires Everywhere, which just aired on Hulu recently. And we looked episode by episode at what was similar to the book, what was different. We even had author Celeste Ng on the podcast in every episode talking about, you know, her trips to set, meeting the writers, and seeing her own work adapted. So I think for anyone that loves books, reading, TV, pop culture, it's kind of a podcast that sits at the intersection of all of those and can appeal to, you know, a big TV watcher or a big reader or someone who's just like, is this what the was in the book?
I know what our listeners are going to want to know. They're going to want to know, how'd you get a gig running a Read It Forward website for Penguin in the first place? And then how'd you convince them to do not one, but it's more than one podcast, right?
Yes, it is. I like to say I have an absolute dream job, but I really got my start in magazine editorial. I started as the editor-in-chief's assistant at a bridal magazine. And from there, I moved over to the Oprah magazine, where at first I worked in fashion and style as the assistant to the creative director. But really, I always was a reader. And so I moved over to work for the reading room section of Oh, the Oprah magazine, where I worked for about 4 years. And I got to review books for the Oprah magazine and interview authors and work on the next iteration of Oprah's book club. So I really got to hone my writing style and book reviewing style there. And after working at O, I went to Glamour and was a contributing editor there, but really ultimately missed working with books every day. And so I found this job, which is sort of the person that helms the website, Read It Forward. And so I get to be really inventive about ways to get books into readers' hands. So we can do that in a myriad ways. Basically, when I ask someone how they heard about a book, you know, it's all sorts of things. They're reading reviews, they listen to an interview on NPR, they saw a piece in the New York Times, a friend told them about it, they saw a picture on Instagram. So really, I try to be in as many of those avenues as possible when I'm recommending great books to people. And so we create, of course, editorial content on readitforward.com. We have a really strong social media presence. And we also create YouTube videos where I sit in front of a camera and recommend books to people, which is really fun. And then I figured, well, what's missing? What about recommending books for the podcast listener? So about 3 years ago, we started the Read It Forward podcast, where I get to tell people what it is that I'm reading every week and also interview great authors about their forthcoming books.
It's weekly?
It is weekly in seasons. So we're right now,
okay,
we're in between
seasons. Okay,
because
I was going to say, I just went on and looked at it and was like, wait, there's nothing here for the moment. There's good stuff, but it's old stuff. So you're seasonal.
We are seasonal.
Are you alternating season? A season of the adaptables, a season of the other one?
Well, I'm not quite sure about my cadence right now because we have gone straight into season two of the adaptables. So I think they will be, maybe sporadic. I'm not quite sure when the Read It Forward podcast is going to come back, hopefully this summer. But I've been gathering great content with authors. So there'll be a lot to put out when we do come back.
It's funny because I've been thinking a lot about adaptations, not only because I watched Little Fires Everywhere, but because I was out on a walk yesterday talking to my friends about the new Emma, for example, and adaptations tend to get people really worked up. Either they're the worst or they're the best. Or, it, you know, I know that, for example, with Outlander, there was all this brouhaha, like, what are they going to leave out? How can they get everything in? And, you know, are the people going to look exactly right for the parts? So why do you think it is that people get so invested in adaptations of their favorite books?
Well, I think every reader is able to picture the characters in his or her own mind in a certain way. And I think it can be hard to go to an adaptation and say, okay, now I'm trusting someone else's interpretation of these characters, of this book that I loved. I think readers, you know, have a deep respect for the written word. And if they feel like their beloved book has been changed or altered in any way, if it doesn't somehow live up to their expectations of the first time they ever read it in their minds, you know, I think it can be nerve-wracking or can feel disappointing. But Celeste Ng, the author of Little Fires Everywhere, shared with me her thoughts about her work being adapted, and she likened it to a great cover song of one of your favorite tunes. And the cover song uses the same melody, the same lyrics, but it inherently is different than the original. And we love that about cover songs. So yeah. She said, you know, I like to think of this adaptation as a great cover song. Use my original source material and infuse it with your own creativity and your own art. And whatever the end result is a new cool product.
Well, and so, I guess that's the way you have to think about it, because as an author, you know, generally speaking, authors don't have a ton of say and yeah, as to how their work is adapted. So I guess it is best to have that point of view where you sort of sit back and say, you know, I'll be interested to see what they do with it. I wanted to mention, actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, KJ, but isn't it true that your children did not see any of the Harry Potter movies until they had finished the entire series?
Up to a point. We did have that rule for a long time, but it came clear. My boys loved that series. My girls are not fantasy readers, and I know that was the exception for a lot of people. It wasn't for them. So one of them only got to like book 2, and the other one only got to book 5. And by the time they were in their, you know, teens, I was like, okay, you can watch the movies if you want to watch the movies. You know, their friends were watching them for like the 14th and 15th times. So. Yeah. But we did have that rule for a long time, and it would be like used and bandied about. And the, you know, you can't watch this movie. You have to leave. You can't watch this yet because you haven't finished the book. So it worked up to a point. And I didn't want it to have to work, but yeah. They do read. Those were not for them, as weird as that may seem.
There was a woman, I saw someone on Twitter who is a historian, and she said that the Jane Austen movies just get ruined for her when she sees that the hairstyles are incorrect. And there can be, for example, with Little Women, also there was she mentioned Little Women as well, because the hairstyles were not authentic. There were like little wispy bits hanging, and the women just never would have done that. And they would have had this, you know, dirty, streaked, pulled back hair with no little wispy bits. And so as far as she was concerned, those adaptations were dead to her. It was very funny.
I think that's true of not just adaptations, but of everything. If you have a person, like, I can't watch, you know, I used to be an assistant district attorney in New York City. I can't watch TV shows about assistant district attorneys in New York City, because I just spend the whole time screaming. Celeste Ng's book. Celeste Ng is great, but I am an adoptive parent, and I found that part of the storyline, I just couldn't, I just... all I could do was read along going, that's not, but. And finally I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this justice. It had nothing to do with her, or it was a personal experience thing. So I guess some adaptations are just not going to work for some people.
Well, she says in our interview, she talks about how if the adaptation doesn't work for you, don't worry. The book always exists. So the book in its original is always there, which I think is comforting.
I love that idea. Yeah. If the, because, you know, there have been some really
maybe they'll
bad
adapt
ones.
It 14 times, a la Jane Austen.
Exactly.
Well, and I only wish.
Well, and I love that, you know, there are adaptations out there, like the adaptation of A Prayer for Owen Meany, where John Irving said, I don't even want my name on this. I don't want my name anywhere near this movie. And so had his name expunged from, you know, all evidence of his name expunged from the movie. And so I guess there's always that variety. But the cool thing about the Little Fires Everywhere is that they actually, if Celestine never mentions the race of one of the main characters, and they took it in a very different direction than the book, simply based on the fact that they added a whole nother level based on the Kerry Washington's race, which was really cool to me, actually.
Yeah, I think the casting and the layers that adds brings a whole other level to Celeste's work. And she herself was like, I loved seeing Kerry Washington in Mia's role that I wrote. And once I sort of saw Kerry adopt this persona, I really can't see my own character in any other way. So she herself, you know, her attitude about her own work changed after seeing the casting. And I think for anyone who comes to the show first and then reads the book will only ever see Kerry Washington in their mind's eye. And so the book will grow and change as readers bring their own interpretation of the character to it.
Absolutely.
Which is so interesting, because the way that we in the United States, you know, react and feel and think about race adds so much. And so you're going to sort of be reading along and just have these layers that are there that Celeste Ng didn't necessarily write in, but yet they're there, which is one of the, I mean, that's just, that's really cool. And as a writer, it's cool to think that there are layers that readers are going to bring to your books that, you know, you do and you don't intend, and yet that doesn't mean they're not perfectly valid.
Well, that's what's so cool about an adaptation of a story that's worth telling over and over again. I mean, you can tell Emma as Clueless, which, you know, is one of my very favorite films of all time, and yet gain so much from adapting it.
Modern hairstyle!
Sorry.
Well, and I
modern
think...
Modern everything, but not anymore. Now it's, like, super old.
Yeah, you know, exactly. whether or not the wisps of hair allow a young woman living in Brooklyn or Des Moines or LA or Portland, Oregon, to see herself in the shoes of the characters in Little Women, right, or in Emma, I think being able to see yourself in a character and relate and adopt the story as your own, that I think is the most important thing of an adaptation. Is that's why it's brought into modern times, or why hairstyles are, you know, updated, things like that, is just so we can all see ourselves in these characters for even a split second.
One of the adaptations I wanted to bring in really quickly to talk about is have you seen the new version of Little Women with Saoirse Ronan?
Oh, yes, I have.
Okay. So what was interesting about that adaptation to me is that I adored it. I thought it was wonderful. And I followed along perfectly well with the weird, not chronological, jumping back and forth thing. But my kids, who had not read Little Women or had not seen any adaptations of Little Women, got kind of lost in the, you know, jump from one time to another and flashback and flash forward. So I think that adaptation felt to me like an adaptation for people who already knew the story. And is there room for something like that? Or do you think that we should be making adaptations that are for people, for anyone that can come to and get the same sort of value from the experience of watching the film?
I mean, I think I love adaptations that make us work a little bit harder. And I don't necessarily hear a lot of people who see a movie like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is also not chronologically told, and say, I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, people are always slightly disturbed when it may deviate from the original that they're used to. But I do like being asked to do a little work and stitch some things together. And I think that if you are indulging in culture and watching or being a viewer of or someone who is partaking in this cultural conversation, to be asked to do a little work or to come out of the theater and be like, oh, you know, I wasn't following initially, but I guess that scene takes place way before the one we see later. You know, like, I think that yeah. is the beauty of art that makes us continue to remember it long after we've sort of dumped our popcorn in the trash.
Yeah, we did a lot of talking about that, about Little Women after we left the theater. I just thought it was interesting that clearly the director Greta Gerwig was a fangirling a little bit over the book and felt perfectly fine with, you know, coming at it from inside the text as opposed to from, you know, retelling the story in a way that was going to make perfect sense to everyone.
Exactly. But I love that because it's like, oh, she's a true fan. She's one of us.
Yeah.
And
do you yeah. have a favorite adaptation, dare I ask? I know it's hard to put people on the spot, but it just occurred to me that I was going through in my head all of the different adaptations that I love, and I wanted to know if KJ had one too.
Well, it's funny because when you stop to think of all of the different shows that actually come from books, I mean, we have been treated to a lot mm-hmm. lately. So I love Killing Eve is an adaptation that is...
We were just talking about that yesterday. KJ, yeah. I have not seen it, but KJ has been watching it.
I have been, but I had... And I, as I'm watching, because I knew it was an adaptation, I've been, you know, wondering, and I haven't read the book. So I keep wondering, I wonder if this is out of the book. I wonder at what point they... Because it you know, I suspect that they sort of took the book and then leapt from there, but I don't know because I haven't read it yet. And I've been thinking about getting it. And yes, you know, I'm watching that with my children. Totally, totally appropriate. We're learning a lot. It's very educational.
But I also think Big Little Lies does a great mm-hmm. job. Certainly season one sticks, you know, almost identically right. to the book. And season two, they felt that everyone was clamoring for another season with these characters. And so they were on their own in terms of source material. And I think the resounding result was that season two paled in comparison to season one. So it really just goes to show that, you know, the book's influence was certainly really strong in Big Little Lies and helped it stand out in a way that season two kind of floundered, even with the addition of Meryl Streep. So
I was going to say, there were actually parts that I really enjoyed about seeing this man through, you know, the person, I don't want to put any spoilers in here, but seeing them a major male character through the eyes of his own mother added an interesting layer for me anyway that I was kind of intrigued by, but did not love it as much as I loved the first season. But there's, you know, for me, I've seen every Jane Austen adaptation a million times over. I love the fact that one version of Sense and Sensibility includes the fact that Willoughby comes back in the middle of the night looking to make apologies and another one doesn't. I live for all that stuff. And I'm perfectly happy with, you know, people making different decisions about what needs to be in the book and what doesn't. And I love the fact that there's room for that. I love the fact that there are these pieces of these books that are so beloved that people will adapt, if for lack of a better word, to all sorts of changes being made as long as the core sentiment, the core themes, the core feelings it gives you, because really for me that's what Jane Austen is all about. It's those, when I need a pick me up, when I need to feel comforted, I turn back to Jane Austen. That's just my source of comfort, and the adaptations all give me that as well. And you know, I get to watch Colin Firth come out of a pond, and I get to watch,
I mean,
you know,
who doesn't love Willow, that?
Yeah, exactly. It's all good. It's
well,
all
and
good.
I think two adaptations that are favorites of mine now for me, the movie versions loom larger than the books, which are Bridget Jones's Diary and The mm-hmm. Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's good. Those
both
are good
of
ones.
Those now, when I think of that source material, I think of now the movie before the book. So both of those, that's, I think, really... are so well done. Speaking of Colin Firth, so.
Absolutely. And there is, but there is something that I love about coming at it backwards too. We really, really enjoyed the movie, The Arrival. And then I found out it was based on a short story. And so I love backing into the source material through a film that I liked. And so suddenly, instead of having comparing the adaptation to the original, you're suddenly comparing the original to the adaptation that you like so much, which is kind of fun too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why Little Fires Everywhere has hit the bestseller list recently. Again, it's because people are coming to the source material. And I think no matter how you discover a book, if it's new to you, if you've never read it, it's like the best gift in the world to get a great piece of fiction in your hands that you've never experienced before. And I, for one, am not judgmental as to like how you found it.
KJ, did you have an adaptation that you really wanted to mention?
I was really hoping you wouldn't ask.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
You know, I'm just not a.
Oh, that's
no.
Right.
I would almost always rather read than watch. So yeah. I don't have that many of them. It's just not my. It's just not my thing. Well, I always go back and reread the book before I would sit down and watch the movie. And that's very frustrating to my family, actually.
There are definitely books for me that I just don't particularly want to mess with because either because I came to them at a certain point in my life and I don't want anyone messing with the characters for me. There are absolutely books that I don't, if they
that's
make
the Harry Potter books for me. Mm, I won't see the movies. I just don't want. I just don't. I mean, I've seen little bits of them. And they do color my view of the characters now, but by and large, those are good. I was good. I got them in my head, and they're just right. I don't need the movies, which is not to say the movies aren't great. I'm glad people are enjoying them.
Well, so I have not read Normal People, which is the next adaptation that your podcast is handling, Abby, and So when you go to talk about an adaptation, do you read the book first? Do you keep the book separate? How do you handle going into a new adaptation and talking about it on the podcast?
So I first read Normal People when it came out, which was, I believe, a year ago right now. And so this adaptation has come pretty rapidly since publication, which is pretty cool.
That is really fast. Incredibly fast.
So I did reread it in order to reacquaint myself with the characters because it's funny how gaps in your memory just exist. You know, this whole character of this man named Jamie. I'm like, who the heck is Jamie? So I had to reread it in order to really be able to say confidently, yes, this is in the book or this is not.
I actually got caught on that one time. I taught Pride and Prejudice in a British literature class, in a high school British literature class. And I was talking about something in the book and it turns out it was in the Colin Firth version of that adaptation. And one of my students caught me on it. I had completely missed, you know, misplaced that piece of knowledge and put it into the video as opposed to the actual book itself. Whoops.
So the Normal People adaptation is a joint venture between the BBC and Hulu. And so it, of course, is set in Ireland, in Sligo, and in Dublin, and is shot there. And so it's beautifully moody, very rainy. The fashion is impeccable, lots of tweeds and sweaters and, you know, cozy looks. She's got the actress that plays the main character of Marianne has the most beautiful, as the British would say, fringe.
yeah.
She's got great bangs. And it's just a gorgeous love story that's told in half-hour snippets. So it's very easy to binge. Hulu dropped all of them at the same time, which is exciting. And the show, I have to say, is very sexy.
Well, and I have to say, you talked about the ability to binge it. I do get a little miffed when I'm like, what do you mean I have to wait a whole week to watch? We've gotten so spoiled. You know, I said to my husband, I remember very specifically when once a year The Sound of Music would come on and you would look forward to that for an entire year. And I'm like, wait, I got to wait a whole week to see the next installment of this show? How dare they? So for me, it is kind of fun when they drop them all at once.
I know. It's hard to know what the best strategy is. I'm glad I'm not an executive at Hulu, because for Little Fires Everywhere, they dropped the first three at the same time to get you hooked, and then once a week after that. And, you know, that is a very propulsive story where Celeste Ng was talking about how they sort of leaned into the mystery aspect of her story, which is not necessarily at the forefront of her book. And I think they want to keep you coming back episode after episode, tuning in next week. Are you going to make it 7 days? And with Normal People, I feel like it's more atmospheric. It's more interior. There are a lot of longing, furtive glances at one another. And so it has that less of that what's going to happen next and more I just need to be with these characters for a prolonged period of time.
So for, well, and you can see maybe they made a different decision.
Yeah.
Times are different. You know, maybe they went, yeah, we were going to do this week by week, but now we've got a captive audience. Let's feed them. And we can't make them anything new right now. So let's feed them
this.
Exactly.
That's true.
Let's
a friend of mine, a friend of mine who does films, she has most of a film in the can, and they just don't know when they're going to be able to finish it at this point. So yeah, it sounds like we're going to have a little black hole of content at some point. So why not drop it now?
Yes, well, we thought about the adaptables and what we were going to do in terms of season two, I think we said, well, let's do Normal People because it's new, and we could also do Defending Jacob on Apple TV. Perhaps as season three. And then we've got all sorts of time to be able to go back into the vault and look at one-off movies and old things that have been out a little bit and do some deep dives. So I think we may be in a content lull in terms of new projects, but in terms of the podcast, right, we've got so much to mine. We could always go back.
What a fun podcast idea. I love this idea. Now I want to be on it. It sounds like such a fun thing.
Well, we should have you on.
So for for listeners, should they listen? Should they watch the show before they listen? Is there a spoiler alert on your podcast?
There is a spoiler alert. We like to have you watch an episode of the show and then come, you know, as you're doing the dishes or whatever, come listen to our recap of it. I always, when I finish an episode of something, want to talk about it. And so we like to think that our podcast stands in as that conversation. And
cool,
you know, we do talk about the show with, you know, lots of spoilers. So yeah, do watch the source material before coming.
Gotcha. All right. Well, speaking of source material, let's talk about what we have been reading. Abby, do you have a book that you have liked recently?
Yes. I mean, so many. But I will give a shout out to All Adults Here by Emma Straub. Emma is one of my favorite authors. She's also an independent bookseller herself. She and her husband own Books Are Magic in Brooklyn. And all
I am wearing their sweatshirt.
No way. Oh my gosh. It's
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So
it's one of the three things I wear during shutdown.
Yes.
Because yeah. It's cozy.
It's very cozy. So All Adults Here centers on a mother and her three adult children, and she witnesses an accident in the center of her town that makes her reflect on the ways that she raised her children. And we also get to see these children in their adult lives sort of struggling to always adult, which I don't know about you, but in quarantine, every time dinner rolls around, I'm like, I have to cook again. Oh my God. So
we have experienced that.
Yes.
Yeah. This book feels very perfect for these times. It's both, you know, lighthearted, but also will really make you think and feel and miss your family. So she's just a masterful writer, and I just gobble down anything she puts out.
KJ, what do you have?
She really is amazing.
Yeah.
I've been binging so much fiction lately, but weirdly, I've picked up a nonfiction book, and it was solely because of the recommendation of our joint agent, Lori Abkemeyer, and It's called The Address Book. I can't remember the subtitle. We'll put it in the show notes. It's by Deirdre Mask. And I sort of picked it up thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, another of those books about how your address can tell you everything about, so, you know, it's going to determine where you go to school and how much money you make and all this. No, it's not that at all. It's a deep historical dive into street addresses. And it is so insanely nerdy. I never gave a moment's thought to how the houses in New York got their numbers, or how the streets in New York got their name, or why there are numbered streets in the United States, but you won't find a numbered street anywhere in Europe. In fact, they have laws against them. Or why the Japanese don't even name their streets. They just name the blocks. It's just, I just can't stop. It's literally, it's some kind of sick, twisted, nerdy page turner, and I love it. I don't think they'll be adapting it for television.
But that sounds fascinating. I love getting weirdly deep into a subject.
Oh, I love it so much.
You could write 1,000 novels out of this book.
I've been, as per usual, on a deep nonfiction binge. But I have had 5 recommendations recently that I got because I listened to the Long Form podcast. And the Long Form podcast is one of my very favorite podcasts. It's there's just some amazing, amazing interviews there with people like Michael Pollan and Michael Lewis, and just some really wonderful people. But the past 5 books I've read have all been recommendations from that podcast, and I've loved all of them. One of them that pretty much blew my mind was a book called Why Fish Don't Exist by Lulu Miller. And Lulu Miller is, you may know her name from Radiolab and Invisibilia. She's one of the co-creators of Invisibilia. And I was telling KJ and Serena recently, Why Fish Don't Exist blew my mind because it is very difficult to explain what it is. It's one of those books where you say, well, it's kind of a biography, but it's also kind of a memoir, and it's also looks at like taxonomy, which sounds bonkers, but I cannot recommend this book highly enough. It is so fantastic. And then on top of that, I heard about a book called Nerve by Eva Holland. They interviewed her on that book as well, and she's a contributor to Outside Magazine. And this is a book about our relationship with pain, physical and emotional pain. And again, that book is part, you know, deep dive on the research and part memoir, and it's been really wonderful. And then I just finished today a book called Why We Swim by Bonnie Tsui. And I'm so sorry, Bonnie, if I pronounced your last name wrong. It's T-S-U-I. And Why We Swim. Again, it's a deep dive into our human history with swimming. And it's also part memoir for her. And all of these books, I feel like I've got this one single source for everything I've read lately. And I'm sticking with it for the moment because everything has been so good.
Yeah, those all sound amazing.
Yeah, no, they're really, really good. And it's just what I love, the deep, dorky, you know, well, and like the address book, I'm going to be jumping on that because I love that kind of minutia. And then you go to a cocktail party and you have all the best tidbits.
When will we go to cocktail parties again?
Yeah, that's true.
You could go to a Zoom happy hour.
That's true. Yes, KJ.
So Jess, you love your yes. audiobooks, and it's just occurred to me that I can't imagine listening to something like The Address Book as an audio, because one of the advantages of not having it be audio is that, you know, if maybe I'm slightly less interested, for example, kind of skimmed over the part about all the things that were named about after the Jews during World War II, and then that got unnamed and then renamed, I don't know, I just wasn't in that space. So I didn't really, so yeah. That's an advantage yep. to the print. Are you listening to these? Do you listen
yeah.
to Why Fish Don't Exist and Nerve and Why We Swim? Wow. Well, I guess because they're memoir-y. Do you think that
helps?
So
it's been a combination because some are available on Audible and some are on audio and some are not. So for me, just to fill Abby in. So I can't read a lot off of a screen. It just hurts my head. I can't do it. So it's either off the page or on audio. And so for the most part, these have all been audio, which has been wonderful because I've been working on lots of projects outside. And then one of them was on the page. But the address book one, I think I'm going to go ahead and purchase that book because right now, you know, I'm going to purchase the paper book. And that is exactly something my dad would love. And so I will pass it on to my dad after I read it.
I do have it in paper, so we
yes, I know. But then you'd have to give it to then. Well, I'll go ahead and buy it, and that way I can support the author who is trying to release a book right now at like the worst possible time, and then I can give it off to my dad. So
yes,
well,
exactly, and then you don't have to stand 6 feet apart. Toss the book to one another.
Exactly.
Put it on the ground and like kick it over to her with my foot. Yeah. I am in the middle of writing a novel right now. And I keep having the people go to shake hands and then I'm like, no, wait, maybe we aren't going to be shake. Like, I don't know. It's not, it certainly doesn't take place during this. It just takes place during sort of ordinary life, but these two, there's going to be a before and after on some of this. And so I just put it in brackets, shook hands, elbows. I'm going to have to go back and figure all that out in 6 months.
Yeah. Actually, before we sign off, I want to tell you really quickly, Abby, I remember here listening to an interview of Michael Ondaatje talking about The English Patient and the adaptation of The English Patient. And he said for him, it was really natural transition because he does not, when he writes, he doesn't tend to hear words in his head, he tends to see the images. And so for him, The English Patient was so natural for him to suddenly see the images emerge and view it because that's just the way he writes, which is so different from how I write because when I write, I'm hearing the words in my head and not seeing much of anything at all. So I thought it was really interesting to hear the difference from an author on just how they would approach seeing their own adaptation or whether they can see their own adaptation ahead of time. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. But thank you so, so much for being on the podcast today during this very weird time. And we wish you all the best of luck in getting through all of this in your Brooklyn apartment.
Thank you. Well, I have to say I'm slowly working on a memoir. So
excellent.
Your podcast always inspires me to sit my little butt down and maybe write a few words. So I thank the two of you.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. Yay.
Awesome. Well, the more we inspire each other, the more likely any of us is to manage to write any words.
I know. Exactly. It's a team effort, honestly.
All right. And speaking of which, until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Thank you.